for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Since the recession began, there's been a huge jump in boomerang kids, adults who move back in with their parents. Recent census data show 5.9 million Americans between 25 and 34 have returned home. This affects both families and society. Joining me in the studio, Linda Gordon. She's psychotherapist, co-author of a new book titled Mom, Can I Move Back In With You? And Carolyn Hacks of The Washington Post. You read her column every day. And joining us from WYPR in Baltimore, Maryland, Catherine Newman of Johns Hopkins University. She's author of The Accordion Family, Boomerang Kids, Anxious Parents, and The Private Toll of Global Competition. We'll take your calls throughout the hour. Join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. To have you here. Linda Gordon, let me start with you. Are boomerang kids mostly adults who have been affected by the job market and simply cannot earn enough to support themselves?
I think it's a combination of things. I think the trend is trending towards that. But it actually, when I started looking at this and doing focus groups, it was about 2004, we were noticing the trend, and it was before the recession. And so I think part of it is also because our generation, the generation of our kids, is not really sure when they become an adult. And they're not getting married at 22 as, you know, their parents did. And there's a lot of job switching, and there's unpaid internships. So what's happening is they're moving back home partly because home is comfortable, and there is a bit of a lack of generation gap between their parents. They like their parents. So you have that to begin with, and then you add the economy.
Carolyn Hacks, how do you see it?
Well, of course, the ones that I see are more the dysfunctional situations where people are— First of all, there are certainly some people coming home because it's more comfortable or because the real estate market. I mean, we haven't mentioned that. Before the recession, the housing prices went out of control in so many places that some adult children who were earning plenty of money still couldn't get off on their own. But what I'm seeing a lot of now is the failure to launch kids, the ones who, for example, aren't being absorbed by this economy because it's just we don't have wage jobs anymore necessarily, or we don't have a system that really supports people who aren't 100% functional, and a lot of them are washing up at home to the great dismay and distress of their parents. So, and often there are substance abuse issues involved as well. And again, is that related to the economy? I actually think so, because those are timeless problems, the substance abuse, for example. But I think fewer people are able to hang on when the economy is bad. I think some of these kids might have been able to get a foothold on their own, even struggling. But now it's almost like forget it.
Catherine Newman, you've been watching this trend of expanding and contracting families. Your book titled The Accordion Family certainly indicates that this has been going on for a while.
That's right. It is, as Linda and Carolyn both pointed out, a secular trend that's been with us for quite some time. The economy plays a big role here for all the reasons that have just been explained. There's some other issues worth paying attention to. It takes longer and it costs more to gain the kind of educational and workforce credentials to launch into anything that even remotely looks like a middle-class trajectory than it once did. The long unpaid internships, the master's degrees that cost a lot of money, all of that takes its toll. And so to some degree, American families and families around the world are sheltering their young and providing them with opportunities to springboard into what they hope will be a better trajectory long run. But in many other families, it's really about a global economic crisis that is pushing wages down at the entry level while keeping the cost of living very high. And there really isn't going to be any other alternative except to move back home, especially for those, as Carolyn put it, who are sort of at the very bottom of the capability heap.
It really does delay adulthood in many ways, doesn't it, Linda?
Well, absolutely, it delays adulthood. But then I think that some of this period of time, I hope I can explain it in a simple way, but if you think about us living longer, it's actually, when you're 20, you've actually lived a shorter percentage of your lifespan. And so I'm not so sure this isn't something that is a new normal. So 20-year-olds have not now lived, 25% of their life. They may actually live longer. So it's not so odd. I think that there is the economic trend is a very important one. The recession's a very important one. But I think we need to look at this as a both and. This was happening anyway.
You know, what's interesting, especially to me, Carolyn, is the psychological impact on both, the young people and their parents, the role that each assumes once the young adult moves back in. You've certainly had a lot of columns dealing with that.
I have, and I have a lot of people asking questions on how to figure out how to work this new normal, because when the parents now had a different model when they were leaving home. And so, in fact, I like your notion of the percentages, Linda, because maybe they spent 25% of their lives under their parents' wing, and now their kids are doing the same, but that's taking them to a older age and presumably greater maturity. And so the parents have to renegotiate these roles in a way that they didn't do themselves. So they've got to decide, okay, are we friends? Am I the parent? Are we roommates? Is this an economic arrangement? Is this an emotional arrangement? And they're working out so many of these details that it's just a question that won't stop coming.
And Catherine Newman, I would think that at least initially, parents would say, "Of course you can move back in. Of course we'd welcome you," and then you may have problems begin because of the very questions and boundaries Carolyn talks about.
Yes, I would point to what I think is a new phase altogether of what in my book I call in-house adulthood. Because being at home when you're 24 is not the same as when you're 15. There is a different set of rules in play. There are different relationships in play, and often they're quite positive. If that young person is making progress toward a future that everyone can live with, if they stall out and show themselves incapable of moving in a forward direction, that does change the dynamic dramatically. But if they are piling up experience in unpaid internships or trying their wings in jobs that have some prospect for a happy future, it creates the opportunity for parents to be parents without all the surveillance obligations they had when their kids were teenagers. And there is a more egalitarian kind of relationship in play.
But
this also changes the trajectory for the parents, by the way, because when the nest doesn't empty, they also don't move on. So the whole trajectory of our lives is changing, not just the pathway for young people.
And, of course, we haven't even talked about the economics of all this, the parents taking on an additional financial responsibility when they may have thought they were finally home free.
Yeah, I have heard from parents who are staying in jobs later. They're delaying retirement because either they are paying more money to support their kids or they anticipate having to pay more because their kids haven't launched yet. And so they don't know when that's going to happen, and they don't want to start their retirement clock ticking when it's possible they will have this other financial obligation. So there is this delay. I mean, and I think more of the emphasis is on the delay in the adult children. You know, when are they going to marry? When are they going to have families? When are they going to start supporting themselves? But I think the one that gets talked about less is that these parents who were going to be empty nesters are also delaying their progress.
Exactly. And Linda Gordon, when you think about the question of responsibility,
right,
within that household, you know, is the young adult a child free of responsibility, or is he or she taking on responsibilities as an adult would?
That is the perfect question, because when I have talked to parents, they usually ask what I consider the wrong question. The number one question I've been asked is, do I make my child pay rent? And I think that that's their way of saying, if they pay rent, then they're responsible. But the real question is, are they taking personal responsibility in their lives? Are they showing up for job interviews? Are they on the internet looking and sending out their resumes? Do they have empathy for the fact that you're working? So if they're up late at night, they have to be quiet, just as they would with a roommate. That's just, you know, that's just politeness. So there are many what we call the characteristics of adulthood, that once you identify them, they give parents some kind of roadmap to work towards. And if you see that your child's being financially responsible, taking personal responsibility, being empathetic to the fact that there are working people in this house, then things can run more smoothly. And there's all kinds of boundary questions that everybody's asked, and those are very important.
And we'll talk more about those after a short break. Linda Gordon is a psychotherapist in private practice, co-author of Mom, Can I Move Back In With You?, which is, she's working on a new edition of that book. Carolyn Hacks is the Washington Post advice columnist. Catherine Newman is at Johns Hopkins University. And in this hour, we're talking about adults who move back in with their parents. A recent census data show 5.9 million Americans between 25 and 34 have returned home, usually for financial reasons. The fact that the economy is as it is, they may have gotten their degree, and they have no job. Joining us now in the studio is Jennifer Pape. She's a 23-year-old who graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in August and moved back in with her parents. I want to say one thing before we begin our conversation with Jennifer, and that is that producer Monique Nazareth looked and looked and looked to have a male on this program who had moved back in with his parents. And as studies show, more men have done so, but there wasn't one male who was willing to come back on and speak publicly. Jennifer, it's good to have you here.
Hi, Diane. Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me why you moved back home.
Well, when it comes down to it, I think the number one reason would be finances. I am a lot better off than my counterparts because I actually do have a salaried job. And I was lucky enough to have worked there in high school. And when they decided to restaff a position, they contacted me. So I was really lucky in that sense. So it isn't so much the financial strain, but it was the decision to do so because I would rather pay off my student loans faster.
Of course.
As opposed to paying rent.
So. Tell me your parents' reaction to your decision or your request to move back home.
Well, you know, I don't even think my parents were that surprised. I think they almost expected me to move back home. You know, I knew I kind of wanted to move back into this area, and I had lived there. I had taken a year off of college and started doing some art classes. So I had lived at home previously before returning to Wisconsin to finish my degree. So it almost seemed like a natural solution, kind of. And, you know, I knew I had gotten along with them then, and I was actually pretty excited to move back in with them.
So you get along with them now. What about personal issues like the amount of freedom you have? Are there any rules imposed on you?
Well, I wouldn't say there are specific rules that they've tried to impose on me, but I think there is the atmosphere of respect that, you know, we really do want to maintain. And, you know, I don't really feel hindered because I'm living at home. You know, if I want to go out and maybe stay out late, you know, they don't have a problem with that. Their number one concern, though, is my safety. And I think it would be that way whether I was living at home or living in an apartment, you know. And I think it.
You think it's fine?
Yeah. There are some things that, you know, are different. Like, if I have my own apartment, like over at school and stuff, you know, I might have a few more friends over and have them over to drink and like relax or something. And my friends are still welcome to come over and party, but, you know, it is a different kind of environment and stuff. I don't want people getting too drunk, you know. I'm, you know, because people often drive here, you know, that changes the dynamic. I mean, not drink and drive, but, you know, you have to make sure, you know, certain things happen. And, you know, you do have a little more caution when you're around your parents.
That's interesting. What do you make of that, Carolyn?
Well, I'm listening to this and I hear, well, it's really not all that different. If they would be worried about my safety if I were in an apartment, they'd be worried about here. But I'm thinking, you know, and then as you progressed, it's actually very different when you start describing what actually happens. Because the first thing that I thought of was thinking as a parent, when you have the idea that your kid is out late, that's very different from hearing the door slam at 3 o'clock in the morning because you're a light sleeper and your kid's living at home. I mean, or waiting for that door slam. I think parents naturally detach to a degree when their kids are staying somewhere else. And when the parents know that the information is not available to them where their kid is and when the kid will be home, they're not as invested. I mean, of course, they love their kid just as much, and they'd be just as upset if something happened, but they're not as invested minute by minute when they're across the country in an apartment or across town in a dorm. It doesn't matter, but you're not watching that. But when they're home, I have to think that it's some parents obviously can say, okay, my kid's 25, I'm getting my sleep, and then they do, and bless them. But
you know,
but I know some are going to be up, and they're going to hear the door.
It's fascinating to me, Catherine Newman. I'd be interested in your take on this. Carolyn is referring to a 23 or a 25-year-old as a kid. You know, once my kids reached that age, I didn't call them kids. And yet now we're still calling them kids. What's your opinion?
I think we have redefined the whole trajectory toward adulthood, which has now opened up a space in the early 20s in which the experience Jennifer is having has become a new normal. And if we can adapt to that, it may not produce terrible wrinkles. But I think we need to understand that her family, like all American families, is trading off a sort of collective obligation to see her through her student loans, see her through to a period of time when she can be more autonomous, against these interpersonal issues of her autonomy and managing a new adult-adult relationship in the house. But those student loans are real, and basically this family is banding together to make it possible for their child to cure what would otherwise be an overwhelming burden that would last so long it would compromise her future. So I think these are all aspects of trade-offs. There are no easy solutions here. I would point out as well that this is having consequences for the long range that matter for the whole society. Jennifer is not likely to marry as young as her parents did. She probably won't have children as young or as many as her mother did. And so that has consequences for the whole society. And when we look at what this has meant in a country like Japan, which has faced exactly the same demographics, what we see is an aging society with so-called young people living at home well into their 30s, which has huge demographic consequences. It has policy consequences that flow to the bottom line of Social Security, as in who is in the workforce to pay for it, and whether or not there is a next generation coming along.
Sure.
In the United States, we would have a society aging very rapidly also if we didn't have a large immigrant population that continues to have more children than those who are probably in Jennifer's community. So we've got low fertility, extended period of time in the household, parents that can't graduate to their own elderhood, and financial consequences for young people of these extraordinary educational loan burdens that are going to keep them exactly where they are, even if they didn't work out as comfortable a relationship as Jennifer seems to have with her parents.
Jennifer, what do you think of all that?
Well, I think it is kind of an interesting idea of me delaying my adulthood, kind of, as you guys were talking about before, too, by living with my parents, because in a lot of ways, I actually feel like by living with my parents, I am becoming an adult faster, because, you know, the fact that I feel like I have an end, you know, and a goal in sight to have my student loans pay off and to eventually work towards moving out of my home, you know, it feels like I'm making mature decisions, you know, and my lifestyle is definitely, you know, I work from 8:30 to 5:30, and I do, well, I would cook on my own a lot, but, you know, I also cook at home, and
so
I do grocery shopping.
So you do have responsibilities
at home. You know, I think I was pretty good living on my own at college, but I also find that my mom really also pushes me to take on more responsibilities, you know, like cleaning the bathroom every single week, which in college I would probably only do, you know, maybe every other week or every 3 weeks. And, you know, so it is like, for me, I think, you know, becoming an adult faster and learning to live on my own.
Linda.
And I think that this is not just a moving back home issue, that there are our kids are connected through technology. So what's happening, and this has happened to me as a mother, is my son at one point, and he's thank goodness gainfully employed and living on his own right now. And he will kill me for telling this story, or maybe he'll laugh. But when he was in college, he actually once called and asked us to go online, look in the syllabus, and tell him what room his class was in. Now, this is happening all over the place because people are, again, lack of generation gap. Kids are very connected to their parents. There's now texting. There's cell phones. And so many of the walls and the boundaries are broken down that what our challenge is where are the new healthy boundaries? What do they look like? How do we put them in place? Because we have to do them as parents regardless of whether our kids are moving back home or not.
Here's a message posted on Facebook from Scott. He says, I'm an employed CPA. I live at home with my parents for free to be able to afford buying and doing fun stuff. Carolyn Hex, what's your reaction?
Scott, thank you for going public with this. it's not necessarily a choice I'm going to raise my kids to make, but of course they get to make their choices. And I think that's actually part of the new normal that we have not talked about. And I have a friend who's with two daughters living at home. They're grown and they're employed. And one of them joked about living the life because their parents have this beautiful home and they're not in their faces. about their lives, and they're living at they have a quality of life that there's absolutely no way they could afford. And it took their parents 40 years to get there. So
exactly.
And so that's part of the deal. And Scott, if your parents are on board, then it's none of my business.
Well, that's the point. If your parents are on board. Karen writes, it seems like a long time ago when multi-generational families lived together under one roof. Everyone contributed in some way, whether it was going out to work, maintaining the home, caring for children, or the elderly. It wasn't for free. It came with responsibility, and maybe it's time to put those values back into our culture, Linda.
Well, I think we always have to keep that value in the culture. You have to take personal responsibility, and it's not up to a parent to enable their kid's sense of entitlement. So what you have to do is you certainly help your child pay their loans if you can, and if it's not bankrupting you. We always say put the oxygen mask on yourself before your children. I think you have to think of that as well. How do you provide for your kids but not bankrupt yourself? It's extremely important.
Carol.
Well, also in that multi-generational family, the engine was always the middle. It was always the high-producing mid-20s to 50s part of the family. And now the engine is at the top. The engine is still the parents who are in their late 50s, 60s.
Carolyn Hacks, Washington Post advice columnist, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We're going to open the phones now, 800-433-8850. First to Amit. He's in Troy, Michigan. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you.
Yes, I wanted to call in. I come from a different perspective. I'm an Indian American, first generation, born and raised here in the States. My parents came from India, and as a 27-year-old, gainfully employed, I still live with my parents. I provide just as they do, and for me, it's not a new normal. This is just the normal. We do this in our family, and it doesn't raise any questions. It seems to me that the American culture is one of individual exceptionalism, and when that individual exceptionalism runs into an issue, say an economic depression, people start to complain about having to live with family again. With me and my family, I'm producing, my parents are producing, and this is a way to build intergenerational wealth. And I know my children will be better off because I'm going to do the same thing for them.
That's interesting. Catherine Newman, do you want to comment?
Yes, well, Ahmed raises important points. It's been the custom and remains the custom among most of our immigrant groups to see young people remain at home until they marry. What has changed is the age at which they marry. It has grown higher and higher and higher, and that leaves them at home for much longer periods of time. In communities that are accustomed to this, as they would be in India or in Mexico or in many of the other countries that contribute to our immigration pool, it is not a new normal. As he said, it's the ongoing normal. I suspect his children are going to feel somewhat differently because they will have been absorbed into American culture that does emphasize more autonomy between generations. So we do have a mixture around the country and around the world. I've studied this problem in Italy, in Spain, in Japan, and every culture has a different interpretation of whether this is a problem, how much of this is a problem, whose fault it is, if it is a problem, and who should solve it.
That's an interesting notion. Whose fault it is, Carol?
Oh gosh, fault. I mean, that's almost like the national sport right now is finding blame, assigning blame. Whose fault is it that people are coming home? Is that what you're asking? I don't know that. And again, we have a caller saying that why should we be finding fault when this is perfectly acceptable? Although while I was listening to that, I'm saying all I was thinking was about his potential spouses who might not sign on to this quite as he does because now he's fishing in an American pond. But I think that this is one of those situations, just by the way this conversation has been going, there are so many factors contributing to this. And we've got the recession, we've got real estate prices, we've got entitlement, we've got gadgets. We've got, I mean, I don't know where you start in pinpointing the prevailing influence.
You know, I'm wondering from you, Jennifer, when you said to your parents, how did that conversation go when you said, I'd like to move back home?
You know, I don't even really remember it as a specific point in time.
It just sort of happened.
It really was kind of, you know, at the time, like, I just graduated. You know, I had student loans. I didn't have a job at the time. Right when I came back, I did get a serving job right away, so I was making some income. But it just, it didn't make sense to me to move out, and I think they understood that, you know, and...
You weren't lying around on the couch all day.
Oh, no, not at all.
Eating bonbons, watching television. Jennifer Pape, she's a 23-year-old who graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in August and moved back in with her parents. We'll take more of your calls when we come back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By American Jewish World Service, pursuing global justice through grassroots change at ajws.org. And by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, comic Louis C.K. talks about some of the real experiences he's drawn on for his stand-up comedy and his FX series, Louis. Time magazine just named Louis the best TV show of the year. GQ named Louis C.K. the comic genius of the year. He has a new stand-up comedy special that he's decided to make available only on his website. Join us.
And on Facebook, Mary says, I'd like to hear the parents' opinion of how this is working out. I'll be happy to help my kids at some point, but I'd be very sad to lose the intimate time with my husband. Carolyn, you've heard from parents.
I have. And there are definitely many in that camp saying, absolutely, come home. Let's get you launched properly. And that can mean let you save some money, let you pay off your loans. And many are sad about that lost time. But if they see an end to it, if there's a goal, then many are ready to accept it. But the parents that I hear from, and it's a large amount of mail from parents whose kids are coming home and then getting depressed at being home, at not working at their capacity, and sort of withering and maybe disappearing into their rooms. And then you have these parents in an awful position because they understand that their acceptance of the child at home, the adult at home, is part of the problem. But it's also not the same as 30 years ago when their parents said, you're out, bye, you've got 30 days, because you're kicking them out into a very different world. And a lot of parents just don't have the certainty to pull the trigger on that.
Jennifer, what about your parents' privacy?
Well, you know, I really do think we are each able to give each other space. And actually, one of the things that I think is funny is that I like to call them my adult roommates when it comes to this situation. And, you know, I think with any roommates, you need to give each other privacy. And I think we do, you know, make sure we have time, like, for ourselves and time together. And actually, as we were talking, I was thinking how when I first moved home, my mom was actually getting upset that I was going out so much and I wasn't eating dinner at home more often, and because I was kind of wanting to see friends and, you know, get in touch with everybody. But, you know, like, I'll still go on vacation. I was in New York this weekend. They had the whole weekend to themselves. And, you know, I really don't think it's something that really impedes on.
And what about your privacy? Do you have a boyfriend?
I do have a special gentleman in my life. He's actually in the studio right now listening in. And he is actually visiting from Portland.
And when he visits, if I may be so bold as to ask, he's staying at your house, I presume.
He is staying at my house.
How did you negotiate that?
Well, I obviously wanted to be able to have him, you know, be able to share my room with me and stuff, because we are across the country most of the time. And, you know, you want to be able to just have that time together. And, you know, I knew my parents would probably be okay with it, but I still did have to ask. And I first talked to my mom, and she was okay with it, but she was also like, well, you have to talk to your dad on your own, you know.
And you did.
Yep, and I did. And they were both fine with it. And I think the fact that I was mature enough to approach it and ask about it, you know, give them time, like, before he came to think about it, you know, they were fine with it.
Linda Gordon.
Well, that happens all the time. And what I've talked to parents about is it is your house. And what you're comfortable with, if you can express it in a way that it's about you, not about your child, they usually do understand. So, for instance, I talked to a 20-something who knew that her parents were very religious. They'd be uncomfortable with it. And while she did live with her boyfriend when she was in college, she said that she was uncomfortable making her parents uncomfortable. So that was one way of dealing with it. There are also a lot of 20-somethings that may be returning home and having a much younger sibling. So if you got a 10-year-old, you know, brother in the house, then that's a whole other issue.
Sure.
Because you're not just talking about you or your parents. So I feel like that's one of those really important ways to express a boundary. What do you think is important? And then you have to respect it.
All right. To Pembroke Pines, Florida. Good morning, Jean. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. I guess you might consider me a boomerang kid, but I'm 60 and I'm living with my mom of 84. I lost my job, I lost my home, and I lost my wife. So if it wasn't for my mom taking me in, who knows where I'd be. I'd be in a homeless shelter or sleeping under a bridge.
Catherine Newman.
Well, yes, this is one of the horrendous tolls of this very prolonged recession, is that the fragility of Americans is across the board and in every age group. And some would even argue it's worse for those who are in Jean's age group, because they're expected to maintain all these independent resources. And if they don't have them, they can really be seriously stuck. This brings up a problem we need to recognize here, which is that how the boomerang family or accordion family plays out is very class dependent. When Jennifer says they give me my space, that's because her family has space to give. But if you're looking at poorer families, the kind of crowding that results can really spark tensions, because there isn't a lot of space. So how families adapt to this depends a lot on the resources that they have on the table. I think that with respect to the issues you raised about sort of sexual freedom, I think it's important for us to recognize the gap between this generation of young people and their parents is almost non-existent compared to what prevailed in the past. Talking to the generation of the 1960s, who are today's parents, about whether or not they're comfortable with their children having some degree of sexual liberty is not likely to provoke a lot of angst, since that's the generation that pioneered the whole idea.
So I think that there are good reasons why this generation finds greater degrees of commonality with their parents in their tastes, in their sense of liberty, in their feelings about what makes for freedom and appropriate behavior inside the household.
All right. To Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Hi there, Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to bring up a very different situation that I had experienced that I hadn't commented on. I'm 31 years old, and I moved back home about 2 years ago because my grandfather entered hospice care, and I lived here in the house. I slept on the floor so that when he would wake up and wander with dementia throughout the house at night, it would wake me up so that I could take care of him. When he passed this summer, in early August, my mother went into hospice care because she had stage 4 terminal cancer. And I'm here for the long haul, and I'm going to be with my family as much as they need me. And I haven't heard any dialogue about children of parents under palliative care. Hmm. I know other families who are experiencing this. And in this case, you know, I'm the one that's cooking and eating.
Sure. Linda.
Well, I think we've always looked at that from a sandwich generation point of view. So it's usually that middle generation, the parent that has children to look after, that's also looking after their elderly parents. In your case, you are the youngest generation that has looked after your grandfather and now your mother. Is it a trend? It is just human kindness, I guess, and a connectedness to your family that you're experiencing. And I think we all hope that we will get support from our family. And I'm assuming that what you're juggling with is how to be there for your family and also launch yourself and have your own life as well.
That's a tough situation, Carol.
Yeah, and I just received a heartbreaking letter on this, and it was a very similar situation. It was a father with a long illness and a mother who was not in a position to take full care of the father, so the grown daughter moved back in. I think he died, and then the mother got sick. And so now she's in her mid-30s and has been caregiving for 15 years, and, of course, also breadwinning, because these are people who are not capable of economic production because they're ailing. And she said, when does my life start? When will I ever be able to relate to my friends? I go out, and my friends are... First, they spend the 20s exploring and then the 30s settling down. And she spent 20s and a good part of her 30s without much relief in sight caregiving. And I didn't necessarily have an answer for her. I don't think there's an answer for that. I think there's just, okay, you find relief where you can. You find the things that you can delegate and use that space to start finding what is yours.
I wonder, Catherine Newman, whether you think in this long-term situation we're going to see more of that?
I think we'll see it eventually when we discover that this generation of young people doesn't have children as often as they did before. I think they will find themselves looking upward toward their parents as their major familial obligation for a much longer period of time than they did before. So this is going to produce a kind of fragility for them, which, if the economy continues to crater and the resources necessary to invoke, you know, nursing care or hospice care becomes much less available because people can't afford it, we will end up with families that look more like they did in the 1940s. You know, in the 1940s, before the Second World War, it was absolutely commonplace for parents to be caring for children, children to be caring for parents, and grandparents who moved into the house and spent their old age at home. That was the way things were before the period when women started going out to work in large numbers, and that kind of accordion family began to retreat from the horizon.
Elizabeth, the last thing I want to say to you is that I hope you can find a way to take care of yourself as you take care of those around you. Good luck, and thanks for calling. Let me ask you, Jennifer, are you thinking about marriage, not necessarily to your current boyfriend, but just sort of theoretically in the future, thinking about marriage, thinking about having children?
I mean, we can speak theoretically. We can speak of my current relationship. You know, I would like to get married in the future, but I don't think that my generation has as much of a rush to do so, you know? And I really do value the idea of marriage and committing to somebody, you know? And I think a lot of people I see, you know, get married too fast. And I was once in a relationship that we thought we were going to get married right away, and he just wanted to run away from me, and it wasn't healthy, you know? And I think it's okay to wait. And, you know, you see so many marriages these days, you know, Kardashians, the most infamous one, of just people just jumping into marriage for no reason. And I don't really see...
Oh, the reason, like, reason there, to... I think, was lots of money.
That's an interesting example you choose.
But, you know, I mean, I don't see it as something that has to be, like, rushed or, you know, I don't see the idea of prolonging marriage as something that means I'm, like, prolonging my future, you know? Like, we're building our future now, and, you know, marriage is... You know, marriage is a title for something. It's not, it doesn't mean that in my current relationship we're not constantly evolving and growing. You know, we still have all of that space, and there's only more time to do so.
It's interesting how my generation thought you leave school, you get married, you have children. By the time I was 23, I had my first child 3 years later. My second child, and now, you know, my own daughter did not marry until later. She finished her schooling, her residency, and finally had her first child at 37. So I think everybody does it differently. And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show and to Waynesboro, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Raymond.
How you doing today?
I'm good, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. My comment was this. I actually lived at home until I was 26 years old, and now turning 33 next month, I'm actually looking at having to move back in with my father. Lived in Montgomery County, Maryland, and he, for whatever reason, he moved to Tennessee. And now he's lonely, and basically what the difference is that he actually asked me to move back in with him, given both of our situations. And it's for the financials as well as the fact that he's lonely. I was just curious how that plays in with the themes that are actually being discussed.
Now, have let me ask you, Raymond, have you decided to move back in?
Well, actually, that fully depends on whether I can get a job, because I'm actually completing a course in alternative energies at the college here. And part of it is I have to keep going to school just so I can stay solvent. But the fact that I'm not currently employed, and there isn't a plethora of jobs for those that are coming out of college, if I can find something that pays the bills around here, then I'm going to stay.
And
but
is your...
I'm not really going to have much choice.
Sure. Is your father employed?
I'm actually unemployed at the moment.
Asking about your father. Is he employed?
He is. He can actually pay his bills, but part of the consideration was one of your listeners had said before about living the life. It's not that we want to live the life, but we would like to give each other a greater cushion that we could both live more comfortably without having to worry so much about the financial side of living.
Linda.
Well, you know, my response is, I'm using my therapist's head right now, and the one thing I heard, besides the fact that this might help you both financially, is that your dad is lonely. And my concern for you would be if you began to parent your father. And also, if you enabled your father to stay in this place as opposed to figuring out ways to access people his age, friendships, community, if you can move in with your father and it's a win-win financially, but also if you could both grow socially, then that is okay. But if you can't and you end up being a symbiotic group, you know, dyad that is just leaning on each other, I think that does not bode well for health in the future.
Carol.
Oh, I agree. And I think that the regard for something as the perfect solution, like the single act will solve everything, is a really tempting trap that a lot of people fall into. And I think this situation is actually more specific to individuals than to a nationwide trend. But definitely when you are looking at moving home and looking at it as, okay, then I'll just save money and that'll take care of everything, I think that is actually some faulty reasoning, that even when you're stuck going home, you should actually look at it as at all of the facets of it and see what you can do to make this better for all involved.
Jennifer, do you see an end involved to living at home?
I definitely see an end involved. You know, like I said, part of me living at home is so I can pay off my student loans faster. And once I do that and save up enough money that I can either, you know, move somewhere else, I do plan on moving out.
Jennifer Pape, also here in the studio. Linda Gordon is psychotherapist, co-author of Mom, Can I Move Back In With You? And Carolyn Hacks, Washington Post advice columnist, on the line with us from WIPR in Baltimore. Catherine Newman, Dean of the Krieger School of Arts and Sciences at Johns Hopkins University and author of the upcoming book, The Accordion Family. Thank you all so much. And thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and